Welcome back to Archaic Wrestling, folks. My name is Evan, and I also am joined by Sasha. How you doing, Sasha?
Hello, everybody. Doing good today.
You sound fine. You were a little worried. You were doing a lot of yelling earlier today, but you sound good.
I'm going to be a little bit hoarse, but voice is same as ever.
Exactly. Sultry. Sultry with just the right amount of gravel and I don't know, something that's just pure to your essence, Sasha. Well, you know what? I think we got some really good feedback from our last episode with Vision Quest. I think we're really excited to do another film review after that. That was a good one.
Yeah, from here on, from here on it's gotta be all stupid, very stupid movies.
I'm sure there's
other good ones, but
I don't know if they're good. I mean, I know there's a couple that are okay, but there's plenty that are just garbage. So
just awful, terrible movies.
Looking forward for sure. So, quick update. We were a little disappointed, I would have to say, with Rob Cole's exit from Stanford. You know, we really feel like Stanford deserves a good coach, and Rob Cole is a good coach, you know. There's other things out there, and that's okay. And Chris Ayers has been hired from Princeton, which is really cool. I think that could be a good fit. He's a good coach. He's done a good job with growing Princeton's wrestling program a little bit. So it seems like a very natural transition, you know, kind of Ivy League to Stanford. That all kind of makes sense. He'll probably understand how to navigate those sort of waters, I guess.
Yeah, friendship ended with Rob Cole. Chris Ayers is our best friend now.
Chris Ayers is our best friend.
I mean, it made a lot of sense, right? It was it's sort of the same. It's sort of like Rob Cole minus, you know, Rob Cole moved from Cornell to Stanford for like those same reasons that I think Chris Ayers will be a great coach for Stanford.
Awesome. I'll be very excited in 2 years for our third head coach within the time of this podcast at Stanford.
We're very ready to. We are ready to get out the pitchforks for Chris Ayers if he ever leaves.
I think we do need to mention that we're not even like Stanford wrestling fans. we just follow Stanford for no reason because they're so close.
It's the closest. It's we have to.
We should talk more about other California wrestling schools.
I mean. What, like, I'm not going to talk about Bakersfield. You're not going to get me to talk about Bakersfield on this podcast.
Well, maybe we'll get the head coach on for an episode. he can't have too much else going on.
Cal State Bakersfield and this podcast with listenership of around probably five
Oh, it's
people,
a match made in heaven, man.
It's basically, we're on the same rung there, so I'm sure they'd love to get it to come on here.
You know what? I think that you know, the season's just around the corner here, getting ready to start. Let's follow Bakersfield closely this year. Let's check in with them.
What if we just became enormous Cal Baptist fans?
No, I like Bakersfield. Actually, that's not true. I hate Bakersfield. Every time I drive through Bakersfield, I go, God, I hate this city. no, we can't be Bakersfield fans, but we should be correspondents for them. It's the least we can do. We should share our platform.
Yeah, if they do anything interesting, you know, we're going to tell you if they do anything interesting.
I'm going to tell people when they don't do anything interesting. Look, the fact that they exist is fantastic. It's incredible, right? Like, I don't know how a program like that is surviving at Cal State Bakersfield. It's not like it's a huge school that just has lots of money to spend on whatever they want, right? Bakersfield's making it work. They're making it work, so I don't mind checking in on them.
I still can't believe Cal Baptist ever had Messenbrink. What was going on with that? How did that even happen? Is there like some connection that I didn't know about that we don't like? It's truly so confusing that ever happened.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I could. You know what? I can't. I can't think of a more a moment of like more you know, good wrestler coming from such a small presence in wrestling, right? I mean, what's Bernie Truax. That, I mean, I guess that's kind of like a similarity, but Cal
Poly.
Well,
Messenbrink was, yeah. Well, it was a, you know, he was, Truax was, you know, from Oceanside, California.
Right, you know,
unknown
right.
Recruit. Messenbrink was the number one recruit and then went to Cal Baptist.
He just went so, there.
What was up with, I mean, weird, one of those, you know, when he's like a multiple time national champ in like, you know, 4 or 5 years or whatever, people are going to break out that like, oh, did you know Messenbrink was actually in like 10 years when he's won a world title, it'll be like, yeah, did you know?
Maybe he's
he
really
went
Baptist.
To a Baptist for a year. Yeah, maybe that's, they're just really into that.
Maybe Messenbrink is like one of those guys that does like the snake handling. He doesn't, you know, he keeps it on the down low, but he's like really into like baptismal Christianity.
That could be the connection. That could be the connection we were missing.
Yeah, obviously. Well, you know, let's not be insensitive towards his religion that we've decided he has. But you know what? Speaking of sensitivity, we are covering another folk style this episode, and I'm excited. It's very unique, I would say, in terms of the elements that make this style what it is. There's going to be some stuff that we haven't been saying about other styles coming out of this. And this style is actually called hookah hookah. And it comes from the Xingu River area of the Brazilian rainforest. So we are going to be talking about a wrestling style that is only practiced by a population, not obviously not the whole population participates in the wrestling, right? But it's a population of about 3,000 people. And, you know, folks, you heard right that it's from the Amazon rainforest, and this is a indigenous people, the Xingu River people. They are made up of 15 different tribes, and you know, I'm sure a lot of folks here have watched documentaries here and there where they've probably seen the Xingu people pop up. And yeah, these are the folks who they don't really wear any clothes. You know, they're generally completely nude. And, you know, they might wear kind of like a sash or a very short scarf around their waist that dangles down and like barely obscures genitals. But in general, like, yeah, everything's out. It's all hanging out. That's just the traditional outfit. So if you watch a lot of videos or look them up, you'll see that these folks, they just, you know, they're generally not wearing clothes. They don't need them. It's not part of their culture. It hasn't been necessary for their survival. You know, rainforest, pretty warm, pretty humid, don't need a whole lot of clothes. You will see like more modern people, more modern generations will wear like a t-shirt and shorts sometimes, but they are also still very comfortable in their traditional non-garb, right? And yeah, just want to bring that up, that when people look up videos of this style, you're going to see naked people. And, you know, try to be big boys and girls about it. But, yeah, I had no idea that this was something, this kind of style of wrestling was going on. And I think the reason we kind of started looking into this is we were talking about, okay, what's the next style that we want to cover, right? What's the next point of history? What do we want to dive into? And we really wanted to cover something that was in North or South America, right? We wanted to get away from the old world, right? And it's really hard to find anything.
Yeah, it's I think this was brought to our attention and probably some of you by the recent video that came out with Anderson Silva, where he's got the you know, he's all like polka dotted on his back. He's got like red and black polka dots as like part of the you know, war paint they use, and then he's doing that interesting, it's not stance in motion, right? It's part of the dance they do before they start wrestling. But some of you I think probably saw this. We saw it, we're like, what's going on here?
And then as soon as I realized, oh, this is literally a folk style, that's what's going on here, we became very interested pretty quickly. They are a people who were, you know, pretty densely populated, and they go all the way back to somewhere around the 12th or 16th century of the Common Era here. That's when ancient roads and bridges kind of like linked the communities together, and that's when they were discovered. And that's, you know, a big part of pre-Columbian history is where they're at. So this is as far back as we've been able to trace the Xingu people, or as the Xingu people have been traced back. But obviously their ancestors were around the rainforest for long, long, long before that. And it wasn't that long ago that the Xingu people essentially were nearly dissolved as a people and as an ethnicity, right? Like through colonization and through like integrating with non-indigenous cultures, right? So they were essentially studied, and they actually were brought together by some, I think they're Portuguese, but
yeah. Or I think they might have been.
No, they're Brazilian. The Villas-Boas brothers. Yeah. And so they're the ones that basically reunited a lot of the people of these tribes. And there was like only a few settlements at the time. And they helped these tribes kind of like reunite and regain contact with each other after they had been, dispersed essentially through like imperialist aggression, essentially.
Yeah.
And
Portuguese.
Yeah. And so they were brought together, and now the tribes have kind of started to reestablish and grow, and they're much more robust now in population. They got video cameras. You can go on YouTube and see them, recording what their day-to-day life is like and stuff like that, right? They've got cell phones. They're interacting. They're not like an uncontacted people, right?
Yeah.
They're very much integrated, but they are choosing to live in a certain way based on their history.
Yeah, and it was the Villas-Boas were some of the people that pushed for the creation of in 1946, like they call it like National Park, Xingu National Park, but it's basically they have like a protected status.
So little corner of the world, not something you think about in terms of wrestling. And the way this happens is the wrestling is not a sport necessarily. That's not exactly the right term for it there. Wrestling is kind of very ritualized. So it might often be used more locally to like settle a dispute, right? Maybe someone just got some beef with you and they'll do a little wrestling match and just kind of release. That's kind of how it's described, as like this kind of release of tension with people.
Taking them into the Thunderdome.
Exactly. Yeah. Take, street beefs essentially for the Amazon. But yeah, they're trying, hey, we just need to relieve a little tension. Let's get that out of there. Right. And so it's done so in that sense in very localized to their tribes. And it's been that way for a very, very long time, which is something that I think is kind of coming up in a lot of the folk styles we talk about, and like, what's the origins. A lot of it is sometimes you just got to smash a dude around, right? Just to get some aggression out, not be so upset about something and have mutual respect afterwards, right? This seems to be it's just a reflection of humanity a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
I think it says something about us.
Yeah, and I think this will be kind of clear when we talk about, like, I mean, of what we've seen, the footage that we have of these wrestling matches, definitely there is much less reliance on like rules. Some of them end in someone getting like a takedown, right? Or like a mat return, that like that sort of motion where it's like, all right, clearly that guy won. And then a lot of them just seem to fizzle out, or mm-hmm. just one guy stands up and then they hug each other. So
yeah.
It's sort of hard to tell what the rules are, but I think that's probably not, it's clearly not the focus of like who is winning based on these rules and like hard refereeing. It's really more about this like festival and this ritual.
It's almost more like the attitude you would take into a mosh pit, right?
Yes.
it's not about like, who am I going to beat up? It's like, I'm just going in to endure this for a minute and vibe with everyone kind of deal.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's not a big mass of people bumping into each other. Obviously it's still one-on-one, but that's kind of the attitude that it seems to be carrying.
Yeah. I wonder if some of the more aggressive matches I've seen were more of the street beef type.
Yeah, and so to get into that, so a lot of the folk styles we've covered, it's been like a national celebration where a lot of the big tournaments are happening, or the big matches, right?
Yeah, Turkey, it's Mongolia.
Yeah, very festive, right? And it's going to be similar here, but not exactly the same. So there is a gathering of the tribes called the Quarup, and the tribes will come together. It's once a year, and there's always one of the tribes will host the Quarup. And there's a big expectation to be a good host, right? If you don't have good food or good lodging for everybody when they come, although the lodging is, you know, it's not exactly, they're not expecting 5-star. They're just expecting, like, you
know. I wonder if Matt Storniolo would like the lodging that he might receive in the Quarup. I'm referring to the famous call out post of Illinois' mat room or their locker room that they provided Northwestern with, and then Isaiah Martinez hit him back, like, how dare you come into my house, criticize my walls that are literally falling apart.
Yeah, they probably won't run into that too much here. I think the expectation's a little different. So they come to the Quarup. You have to be a really good host. It's a big expectation. But the Quarup isn't necessarily a big celebration. That's not how it's treated. Instead, you might think of it as the opposite. The Quarup is more of a funeral, if anything. And specifically a funeral for the big important folks who died that year, who are specifically important to the Xingu community, right? So these could be chieftains kind of deal. It could be, you know, someone who's just very elderly or older, right? Doesn't even need to be someone who comes from one of the tribes. It could they might just be mourning someone who was important to the tribe, like maybe a human rights activist, things like that. They've honored people like that. Yeah. But it is it's about a remembrance and honoring of people who are important to them who have passed away that year. In the first whole day, like her first whole 24 hours of this of the Quarup, which is several days long, is essentially just everyone's mourning people. And one of the big visual representations of that is they carry in these big logs. They'll decorate these logs with paint. And so each log kind of, it's almost like a headstone for a person who has died, right? And so that's like the first big thing, is it's all about mourning people. But then they're apparently it's also kind of like one of these things that juxtapose some stuff, where although it's a funeral and remembering people have died, it also seems to have a big focus on fertility, right? Yeah. Because the other big practice of it is all the women who essentially have who are menstruating now, right? And it's kind of like a symbol of like womanhood, right? Are there, and it's also an opportunity for them to find a partner is the idea, right? Find
people. The women dance, you know, and the men wrestle.
Yeah, exactly.
And through that, they're kind of, I guess, expected to find a partner.
Yeah. So the idea being, you know, you can't all be in the same tribe. You know, we got to branch out here, folks, kind of deal. Make sure it's, you know, not someone you're related to, I think is kind of like the idea behind this a little bit. But yeah, it's essentially a time to be like, you know, I'm a man, I am a woman. And also we're remembering the people that are no longer with us, right? So yeah, lots of dancing, lots of music going on, and tons of ritualization. One of the big things that you notice is they'll have like all the men in the tribes are in these big long lines, you know, like, you know, 200 people or something, right? And they're all kind of doing this same kind of like marching step and chanting at the same time. And the women do something similar later on. It all leads up to the very end of the Quarup, where it's the day of wrestling. It always ends with the wrestling. And it's essentially the chief is the master of ceremonies, right? The chief will say, all right, this person, they're going to wrestle. Go. I thought that the matches were very, very short. You know, sometimes they'd be just a couple seconds, really. You want to describe like what you were seeing with it?
Yeah. So, I mean, what they do is they come in and I'll describe like they have a lot of body paint on. A lot of times they use a lot of black and red for the most part, like face paint, body paint, also mostly black and red, couple mm-hmm. other colors as well. And they all have bowl cuts.
The straight up bowl cut, and it's been slicked down with like a mud or something to like hold it in a very like rigid sense.
Yeah, because they're like almost red. Like it was clay. They're like red or like kind of like orange red. Yeah. So they do this. They come in and then they start by how would you describe it? Like they sort of like stand on their tippy toes, like shoulder width apart, put their arms into the air, like into like a T. Yeah, they T pose and they sort of like tippy toe around in a circle, just like tippy toeing their feet.
And then they jump to their knees. And that was something that was really different here, right? Where the match actually is supposed to start on the knees and generally stay on the knees, right?
Yeah, this is sort of like, I mean, I don't think we've ever seen anything else like this. I don't know of any other folk style, any other wrestling I've seen like this. I mean, the closest comes to like, you know, like drills you might do, you know, game wrestling games you might do, right, in the wrestling room, where the idea, you know, to teach kids how to do like gator rolls or something, where, you know, you have to stay on your knees, no getting off your knees.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, when a lightweight gets down on a knee and kind of like plays the low game, right? It looked a lot like that. But essentially, the wrestling is short offense wrestling, right?
Yeah.
They'll look for like hooks and knee taps, I saw a lot. And there was, you know, not a lot of front headlock. They avoid that sort of situation. But I saw like straight up drags, like really, like one drag was really good. I saw like great technique.
Yeah, a lot of short drags.
Yeah. Mostly, you know, they'll get into collar ties. They'll, you know, maybe an inside tie, maybe an outside tie, and they're just kind of, they snap each other a lot. It seems mostly of just like, they're not trying to score necessarily there, but they are trying to get behind each other. They're definitely trying to get behind each other. And really the only thing I've seen, like when someone tries to talk about the rules, is someone saying that, you're supposed to just throw someone down. Like, that's it, yeah. Right? And it's like, well, you're kind of already down, so I don't know.
It's confusing.
Yeah, I don't know what they mean by down, right? But they tend to stop the match if you, you know, get behind someone from short offense. They might stay there for a sec, and then they stop it. And they'll tend to stop the match if there's a takedown in general. You know, I saw some double legs. I saw knee pick stuff. Because anybody that's wrestled knows that even if you're on your knees, you're driving into each other and you kind of end up going to your feet a little bit. And they don't stop the action there. They just say that's where the action went. And they let them keep wrestling. But a lot of times they'll just be, you know, collar ties, pushing each other around a little bit. Not much is happening. And then the master ceremony steps in and is like, we're good. That's it. That's all it was, you know, and you can, like you were saying, sometimes you're watching the matches and you can tell these are just dudes that got paired up and they go for a minute and that's it. But there's been other matches where it's like, oh, this guy looks like he's trying to like,
this guy wants to snap this guy around. One of the videos you sent me, most of the time, you know, they're both in there, they're both in short offense, they're on their knees. One guy will sort of get like pushed to his feet and then he'll stay there. And then the other guy will get up to his feet. And then when they got pushed to his feet, we'll just be like, oh, awesome, and like hug him, and then they'll leave. So it seems like you know, you can just sort of concede.
Yeah.
If you feel like it. You don't have to keep going. But then in one of the matches that I saw, same thing happened. Guy went up to his feet, and then the other guy sort of did a double leg and was able to come around to his back, and then he just did a big old mat return and slam.
Yeah, that sounds like there was something else going on, especially when when like these other ones, it just seems like they're trying to get out there and show their stuff for a second, right? Just show you, it's just to show that you're willing to get in there and be tough.
It looks like a very like jovial, the whole thing looks very jovial, like one person's in, and it also kind of seemed like had an element where like the guy who won like stayed in and then someone else came in.
Yeah, almost like they were just like a
they just kept it going,
like a three partner drilling, right?
Yeah, it's a whole circle where there's like, you know, like four or five matches going on at a time. Everyone's dancing and they're yelling. They like I know like when someone does a good move, you know, or wins, a lot of them do like the really like high pitched yell.
Mm-hmm.
Is definitely like what the fans are, how they get involved.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it just seems like someone goes out, another person hops right in, and then they keep it going.
Yeah. So no, like, there's no winner. There's no tournament situation. There's no bracket. It's just, let's meet here. Let's have a good funeral. Let's eat food together. Let's talk about our next generation, basically, right? Let's set that up. And let's go at it. Let's wrestle each other for a little bit. And then they just kind of end it, right? So I think this is the first time we've talked about one that doesn't have a strict competition to it. But it, yeah, when you watch it, it is very much like, no, but this is definitely a wrestling style, right? They're hitting moves that they've obviously trained a little bit in. They understand where what they're trying to do, right? Like, a drag is not a very natural move, I feel like, for most people to hit. They obviously have
to be hitting training. That, like, short drag is, that, I mean, that's one, like, you kind of just have to get taught that. Like, that's something they're, you know, they've developed in their style.
Yeah.
I mean, it's when both people are in short offense and they can't stand up, it's hard to take someone down. It's hard to get behind. Like, it's not easy, you know? So most of them don't end in, like, you know, like a really clear winner.
Also really cool that we haven't got to talk about that much is the women will wrestle as well. The women will be out there, and I didn't see very much wrestling of them wrestling at the Korup, but they will wrestle with each other in some of the, you know, like at local stuff, for the same reason the men might. But there is also specifically another gathering called the Yamurikuma, which is a time in which the Zingu people will, I'm not sure why, I need to understand this a little bit more. I don't know, like, what the motivation behind it is, but they end up doing a time where there's just gender reversal day. And the women during this time will actually get to participate in the wrestling. So you see all the women coming out, same thing. They clinch, they just kind of shake each other around a little bit. Maybe there's a takedown here or there, but they end up just kind of going, I'm all right. And they step out and it's like, all right, next one in, right? It does remind me of wrestling, like, those Iron Man things that you do in practice where it's like, all right, we're going up and down the line.
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
And it's super interesting. Once again, everyone's naked, right? Stuff's flopping around. But it's not a problem. It's not a problem. Everyone just, you know, works to score their takedown, and then they get back up and they're happy and they move on with life.
Like, while you're watching it, you're kind of like, sometimes you forget.
I was going to say, like, when, like, you know, if I saw someone walking down the street completely naked, you know, you're like, oh, whoa, it kind of, you know, shocks you a little bit. And it breaks you out of, like, what's going on. You're kind of like, oh. And then you kind of have that same feeling when you watch a video of indigenous folks that don't wear any clothes, right? And that's something that, you know, isn't just, you know, going on here. It's, you know, something that's all over the world, right? There's people that have different standards or different expectations around nudity or clothing or any at all, right? You know, some places they don't care if women are topless. Here in the United States, we have a real problem with that for some reason. And when you see another culture that is obviously doesn't have those hangups, and they're just, like, vibing and acting normally with each other, as you're watching and as you're, like, participating in that mentally, you start to just, like, forget that that's going on. Like, you're not, like, looking at people as, like, sexual objects, right? You're noticing that people are just interacting with each other culturally.
Yeah, your expectation and, like, your environment changes really quickly.
One of the things that I will say also about these, a lot of folk styles, as we're trying to look up more and more that we want to cover, because we've kind of covered everything we can say so far about this, about hookah hookah wrestling, because there's just not a whole lot more to it, right?
Yeah. It's a pretty, like, simple style. It's not based in, because it's not based in, like, such a competitive nature. You know, there's not, like, a ton of refinement that they've had in it. There's not a ton of different techniques, right? There hasn't been, like, this arms race that has developed, you know, in, say, folk style wrestling, like funk, or in, you know, freestyle. Like, there's so many more things at play there. It's a very pretty simple style of wrestling.
Yeah, like, imagine if someone just walked in and did a cement mixer on a dude in there.
Yeah, they'd be like, what the hell? What the fuck was that?
People would be like, why are you taking this so seriously, bro? Just get a collar tie like the rest of us, you know? but that's the thing. You use the term arms race, which I think is perfect, you know, to describe it. If there's no reason for there to be a a reason to score, to beat, to move on, to be superior to the other wrestlers around you, then you don't need to come up with the next great technique because it doesn't mean anything, right?
Yeah, and of course, you know, there's no money involved. It doesn't seem like there's any, you know, even for some of the things we've seen, there might not necessarily be money involved, but there's probably some level of, like, fame or renown or just people are like, oh, that guy's a good wrestler. That's pretty sick. It doesn't seem like there's really that much going on there. I mean, probably there's some aspect of, like, want to look big and strong for, you know, for the women, right? As because it is part of a marriage ceremony. But it doesn't seem like it's still rooted in, like, oh, who wins or who doesn't. Like, that's someone that we, like, you know, put on, like, a higher pedestal.
Yeah, there's no, like, celebrating the champion that we've seen in other folk styles, right? There's nothing like that. They don't pick someone up on their shoulders after they've won or anything. You know, it's very just like everyone's participating. Everyone's part of this. And this is just, you know, the only person that's really celebrating your win is going to be you for the most part, it seems like.
Yeah, from what I saw, so like when someone like got a takedown, right, or like a clear win, I did see a lot of people, you know, coming out and yelling and like dancing, like they seemed very excited, but it seemed like they were more excited, you know, just in general at like the spectacle, you know?
Yeah, there might be some like kind of like whoop whoop kind of thing, like some hooting kind of going on, like, all right, but it was more just like, all right, get the next person in.
Yeah.
Get your matches in. The preseason scrimmage.
Yeah, they're everyone's guaranteed at least like five.
Got to get at least 10 matches in when we go to this.
We're coming all the way. We're coming all the way over to the drive.
You think that's what they're talking about before they leave? Is this home weigh-ins? But so yeah, like I was saying, like we're gonna start running into more and more folk styles. You know, we're saving some of these other big folk styles. We're holding on to them. We're gonna get to them. You know, especially ones that have a lot of history to talk about behind them. But there's also going to be a lot of like little things like this where we're going to ask ourselves, is it a folk style? Is it worth covering? Is there enough information to, you know, really glean and understand it? And there's probably going to be quite a few where we don't know quite how to cover it. We might have to group some styles together almost. Like I was looking at some of the Northern European styles that are, you know, not Russia, you know, where it's just everyone, it's like 10 different styles. They all have different names and they're all described the same way, right? Yeah. How do we want to handle that sort of thing, right? Also, like 30 people in the world do it kind of thing. So that'll be something we need to decide how we want to explore those. And I think it'd be worth mentioning them eventually, but this was definitely one of those styles that kind of teetered on the edge of going into, is there really much to talk about with this? But I thought there was enough cultural, amenities going on here that were entertaining, really. Like, really interesting to learn about. Like, I learned quite a bit from this. I had no idea this was a thing that people did.
Yeah, it was just really interesting seeing just how it's connected into, like, the larger culture. I think, like, something that would be more at the end of is connected to the larger culture and is also viewed super competitively is like the Mongolian wrestling. They have like both aspects of it, like still part of you know, their religion or like mysticism to some sense, and also still like very commercialized and very modern and, you know, done for payment, like the Mongolian wrestling where they had like, we, you know, we watched the video of the ceremony and they had like a, you know, a rap artist come on and he was like performing this like rap in Mongolian. So like when it's more commercialized like that, still like becomes more modern.
This one, not too much else to say. We still think it was really cool though. And it was different. It was nice to see something a little bit different and some people having a different take on wrestling itself.
Yeah, from what we've seen and we tried to been looking at different, you know, North and South American wrestling that we could find because we figured, you know, hey, like this is where we live, let's see if we can check some stuff out. But there's not a whole lot. I don't know why, who knows why, but like Europe seems to be much more interested in wrestling than any you know, any of the indigenous people in North and South America.
Well, I'd be curious because a lot of indigenous cultures in North and South America were farming, right? Some were, but a lot of were also still very much within a hunter-gatherer lifestyle, right? And when you're doing that, there's probably a lot less opportunity, like energy and time, to let's set up a wrestling match, right? As opposed to, I think we're going to be using our calories to go hunt a bison or something, right? So I don't know. Maybe it could have something to do with that, because I do know about a lot of like indigenous martial arts, but those are all incorporating, in the Americas, I mean, but those are all incorporating weapons, right? Yeah. Like there's a lot of archery going on. There's a lot of, you know, small arm stuff like using knives and things like that. There's the sense of martial need that they practice and that they have to worry about, like spears and things like that. But it tends to be things that they're going to use, like in war or in hunting, right? And wrestling becomes less of a focus. I mean, it's great for warriors to know how to wrestle, and that's very important. That's been very important to a lot of cultures, right? But if you're going to hold a weapon, the first thing you're going to worry about using is that. So that's what they're going to focus their training towards, right?
Yeah, that's something I've noticed too. And the other, like the Mongolian, for example, you know, they had the archery and the horseback riding and the wrestling, all involved.
And it was something that they did more of as they had more conquest and had more wealth, right? They're able to justify these things where we go, oh, my son can beat up your son kind of deal, right? And so, yeah, you have more opportunity to do that stuff if you have a lot of farming going on. Like when you look at something like the Turkish oil wrestling, think of the resources that went into that sort of wrestling back in the day. It, you know, to get all that olive oil.
Yeah, farm the olives.
You had to farm for it, right? You had to collect tons and tons of olives. So you needed to have farmed for it. And once you've done that, you also need to kind of be like, well, I settle down for the day after farming and we have free time. We don't need to now move to the next location and things like that, right? And we can plan for things and we can build arenas, right? That's kind of what farming allows a lot of societies to do. And that's why, you know, cities crop up around those areas of the world where farming is really, you know, great. I think it's kind of a big hypothesis. I don't really know if there's any truth to this, but.
Well, maybe because we'd have to also look at, you know, the Incan Empire. And how renowned they were at farming, and then we still haven't been able to find really anything for
wrestling. But once again, like they might have just focused on different stuff. But I don't know. I would be so surprised if they didn't have some sort of wrestling, you know, even if it wasn't competitive, right? And obviously, when it comes to trying to understand what a lot of indigenous cultures were doing, it's going to be really hard to do that if they're a culture that was heavily colonized and erased, right?
Yeah, that could be a part of we could be, you know, would that be like, you know, putting the cart before the horse here? You know, maybe, I mean, you know, North and South American indigenous cultures were obviously heavily colonized. We've lost a lot of their culture as opposed to, you know, European cultures that are kind of have a direct line back to, you know, especially the Mongolian, the Turkish, like they're still doing their wrestling and their festivals exactly like the same way as they used to do it back then. There's just this direct line through like over like 1,000 years that we just don't have for North and South America.
I mean, maybe so. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure that's probably a much heavier factor on this, right? Of you know, if you destroy a culture, it sure is a lot harder to learn about it and to know things about it. So yeah, that makes sense to me. But who knows? We don't really know. And that was something I was actually thinking about. Like, we haven't even done that many episodes, hardly any episodes on folk style, but the amount of resources I'm coming across that cover more than one style of folk style, like as I'm thinking about who has come before us and wanted to learn about lots of different styles of wrestling, right? That's the first thing I think about in terms of, okay, where should we be sourcing information from? Who's already done the work, right?
So I'm not doing it.
Well, we kind of, unfortunately, you know, we're not doing the real work, obviously. We're not getting there. We're not, you know, translating stuff.
We're not getting on a plane. You know,
Yeah, you know, that would be wonderful one day, but no one else has either, as far as I can tell. And I haven't seen even anybody who is collecting the information that is available into one place like we are, which I think is kind of cool to think about. I don't know how fresh this ground is that we're treading in terms of how much information about wrestling in different cultures is ending up in one resource like our podcast, but it. At least I haven't seen very much of it yet, at least in the English speaking world. You know, there's might be someone else that's done stuff, but I'm enjoying the thought of that we're at least putting stuff together in one place. That if you wanted to learn a little bit about a bunch of folk styles, this is a good place to do it. Otherwise, there's not much else, at least that I'm seeing.
Yeah, and we'll eventually get into you know, once we cover these things, it's gonna be very easy to draw a direct line to folk style in America, how that got created, how freestyle wrestling got created. Yeah. And we will, and it's in the cards, but we're building up a base of all of these things, and then we're going to see how they became, you know, like one world style.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping, right? It'll at least, it's going to inform a little bit, right? One thing that we are going to constantly notice is the moves that are not only working in a lot of these folk styles that are similar, but the ones that are working in folk styles that are different, right? Like, none of this is going to surprise anybody to hear me say this, but damn, the underhook sure seems like a really good position to have, because
they're using it everywhere.
It doesn't matter what the style is, doesn't matter what the rules are. That underhook, boy oh boy, is that a good position to be in, right? Oh, getting a guy's leg picked up sure seems good, you know. Headlock position sure seems, you know. I just think that's kind of cool, right? We're starting to see, like, okay, what is the foundations of wrestling? It almost could inform a coach, right? Like, what would I teach somebody if I was just trying to go, I want you to just have a very solid understanding of wrestling and what's supposed to work, right? In general. Because, yeah, sure seems like a double leg's good. Sure seems like a knee pick is great. Just, it's fun. I'm having a good time. It's fun seeing all these different styles.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to see just expand our knowledge more. What people are doing, how they're wrestling, what their different styles are, how other people, other countries experience, you know, like the same thing we do.
I'm looking forward to finding the lost tomb with a scroll in it that has the secret techniques that have long been forgotten.
Well, Kale has that.
The monastic masters. Oh yeah, Kale is like Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
he went somewhere and fought like a ghost or something and came back with the wrestling knowledge. Okay, I want that TV show now though. Kale, just, you know what? Yes, a ghost hunter TV show, but it's Kale. And he tries to wrestle the ghosts.
He just always has that, like, same just kind of not just blank look on his face the whole time. Every enemy, you know, fighting a zombie, fighting a mummy, he has just same, like, slightly irritated, just uninterested look that he always has.
Have I told you my ghost hunter TV show idea? I want to have my own ghost hunter TV show. And it's just called Ghost Punchers. And all we do is we go into haunted house and we take it super serious. And, like, we're going to punch this ghost so hard. We're going to exorcise the ghost out of this house by punching the shit out of him. And then it works. At the end of every episode, we exorcise the ghost or the demon from the house, mostly because we punch them. We solve people's problems.
The ghost meter starts reading zero.
Exactly. We just go, oop, you hear that little beep? Means that ghost is crying because of how hard I punched him. Yeah, that's my idea for a show. Nice little parody, I think. I think it would go over well. I think a lot of people enjoy watching people try to punch ghosts.
You can get a job doing that after this. we can see if we can vault you from this into that, you know, stepping stone.
Oh no, I'm too afraid of fame. You could come with me. You could help punch the ghosts.
Oh, my dream.
You could at least hold the camera. And I want to walk around like a dude that's like trying really hard to like look buff, like with his chest out, and he's got like the luggage arms going on. It's like, is there a ghost in here? Do the whole like Zach Baggins things where they just yell at the ghosts, like the ghosts
get out of here.
Understand them. Come on out.
We're not welcome.
Are you the one that killed that little girl? I'm gonna punch you. This is what happens when there's not enough to talk about wrestling with the folk style. We have to talk about punching ghost shows.
Yeah,
I think it'd be a good idea.
The time for
next podcast will be the ghost punching podcast, where we visit different haunted houses and come back and talk about how we punch the ghosts.
Yeah, if it isn't already clear, we can just do whatever we want on here. It can be fairly tangentially related.
That's right.
there's wrestling history and there's stupid movies. Well, probably a stupid book at some point.
There'll be a lot of stupid books, I'm sure.
Anything we want, as long as there's some justification.
I still don't decide if I want to buy Mark Schultz's book first or if I want to get the Vision Quest novel first.
Gotta do the Vision Quest book.
I gotta know how close it is to the movie.
All right, well we'll get on eBay or wherever we can still find it. We'll do that.
I gotta know what else he wrote too. Like, what else did this guy write? Is it even more wild?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. He might have some other nuts. Some other insane ideas.
We're going to find out that he wrote, like, a ton of 80s movies, and it's going to make total sense.
The collective derangement of the decade.
It's John Hughes. John Hughes was there. Okay, I got nothing else.
Yeah,
I'm gonna cut the podcast right after I mention John Hughes.
Yeah. That's a good
thing. I think that's it.